We had a ruling yesterday that Mr. Horner was allowed to testify to make sure some exhibits got into the record. So he drove from Sacramento yesterday, which we appreciate. Good morning, Mr. Horner.
My name is Gerald Horner. I'm the chief economist for the State Water Resources Control Board. My address is 1319 H Street, Sacramento, California, 95814.
And how long have you worked with the water board?
I've worked with the water board for over 11 years.
And what is your title with the water board?
I am the senior economist for the water board.
And I know that you've helped me and the rest of the prosecution team in a number of ways, and just we're going to cover a couple of topics. But let's start with the foundation of a number of exhibits. You assisted the prosecution team with exhibits 18, 109, and 113. Those are exhibits that concern the economic benefit that we believe was received by the district in this matter. Do you recall those exhibits?
Yes, I do.
Okay. And are they true and correct copies of what they purport to be?
Yes, they are.
Okay. Ms. Thorne may have questions about the economic benefit and how it was derived, but I'm going to proceed directly to ability to pay, if you don't mind.
That's fine.
Okay. How do you ordinarily conduct an ability to pay analysis?
Yes. In every case, we usually require a benefit analysis, benefit of noncompliance, and also an ability to pay analysis. The ability to pay analysis is usually done by first requesting the comprehensive annual financial report from the district that gives us a set of financials according to a prescription that has been agreed to by the accountants that do this type of work. That has been was requested, and we did not receive the comprehensive annual financial report from the district. So therefore, we did not conduct a formal ability to pay on the initial June 27th submission in chief.
Okay. But we did, at the time that the district submitted its materials, receive audited financial statements. Isn't that correct?
Yes, we did.
Okay. So we were able to do an ability to pay analysis at that time.
Yes, I did.
And what did it reveal?
The ability to pay of the district is adequate to cover the proposed ACL without any kind of impact on the ratepayers.
And how did you come to that conclusion?
The conclusion was derived from the financial reports that were submitted for the fiscal years ending in June 30, 2010, fiscal years ending June 30th, 2009, and the fiscal report for the fiscal year June 30th, 2008. In those reports, there is a substantial amount of unencumbered cash and cash equivalents held by the district that is free to be used for contingency expenses for the district.
When you say substantial amount, what amount are we talking about?
For the year 19... fiscal year ending 2010, it is $5,125,000. For the year ending in 2009, it's $5.8 million. And for the fiscal years ending in 2008, it was $6.9 million. This is substantially more than what is typically retain in this type of an account.
Okay, so I want to make sure, I'm not an economist, I want to make sure I understand you correctly. The most recent financial document submitted to us that end for the fiscal year 2010 indicate a $5 million surplus?
Surplus.
Okay.
Yes.
And so that is not indicating that there is bills to be paid, that's not reflected on a budget and outstanding incomes and assets. That's a $5 million surplus.
That is correct.
Okay. Is that money unencumbered?
That is correct.
Is that money liquid?
It is.
Okay.
Some of it is in held, but it's not in a perusal of the accounts. It is not held nothing more than 90 days.
Okay.
So it's liquid in 90 days.
Now, in one of the documents, we talked a little bit about wastewater treatment rates. And, you know, so it's your conclusion that based on this $5 million surplus, that the district can pay the full penalty recommended by the prosecution team without passing it on to the ratepayers. But based on the wastewater treatment rates, what was your analysis of the rates? Are they fair based on a consideration of other wastewater rates around the area?
The rates that are currently being paid by the district is about $16 a month for a residence. $16 a month is a lot less than what the average rates that are paid in the state of California. The average rates are about $26 a month.
Okay. All right. Subject to redirect, I don't have any further questions for this witness.
Go ahead.
18, please. So, Dr. Horner, this is Exhibit 18, which was the Ben results that were provided to us in the prosecution team's evidence. Have you seen this document before?
I have.
Did you prepare this document?
I did.
Okay. And what inputs did you use for this document?
When we started this, I normally go through with the technical people that are assigned to this project. If there is any indication of any kind of either practice or any kind of equipment that should have been purchased that could have prevented the spill, and also whether it was out of compliance, I found in the fiscal year budget of 2004-2005 a proposal for an electrical system upgrade, and my decision was to use or to indicate that this upgrade would have significant effect on prevention of the spill. And let me, I base this on the following description that was prepared by the district. The original electrical system was installed in 1964-1966 as part of the construction of the plant. Additional electrical equipment and wiring was installed in 1986. The wiring that connects the various motors with the motor control center located in the power generation plant has deteriorated over the years due to being submerged by groundwater. The existing wiring is not designed for this type of service, and as a result, there has been several instances where the wiring has failed and either caused an electrical fire or loss of power. This project would replace all of the wiring to the various motors and lighting in the plant with waterproof wiring that is rated for this type of service. In order to keep the plant operating during this process, the wiring will be replaced in a sequenced fashion with one set of wires replaced at a time. In addition, as-built drawings will be created. And it was my judgment at that time is, had that project been undertaken in 2004 at prior or after 2005, it would have had a significant effect not only in upgrading the electrical system, but to uncover other problems that were in existence in this vault.
Okay, so Dr. Horner, were you given the district's evidence when we submitted it to review?
Yes.
Did you review Mr. Thoma's declaration?
No, I did not.
Did you hear Mr. Thoma's testimony today?
I did.
Does that change your mind at all as
no.
to whether that wire? Can I finish
no.
the question, please? Can I finish the question
Sorry.
And then you answer it? So does that not change your mind that this initial 2004 budget item would not have made a difference?
No.
And were you aware of the rewiring projects in Exhibit 51 that we had up on the board?
Yes, I am.
And that doesn't change your mind either?
This was done in June. I did this, perform this in June.
I understand.
Okay, all right. Prior to the submission of that evidence.
I understand.
Okay.
But if your mind has been changed and the Bend model needs to be rerun, that's what the question I'm asking you is. Has there been any change in your thought process that would modify the Bend model?
Yes.
Okay.
There is. If I had to do it over again, I certainly would look at a number of factors that led or possibly led to this occurrence. I think the pump discharge valve, I think, needed to be, could be a cause. Emergency pump, the leaky influent gate, headworks had problems, and again, there was probably other electrical issues that were being discussed or were discussed this morning. I would do a more detailed investigation on those issues and determine what the compliant costs were at the time that should have been done to prevent the leak or the spill.
Okay, so my understanding is you would make the number bigger and not smaller.
I think this right here is a very, very conservative estimate of the benefit of noncompliance.
Okay. And where did the $5,000 estimate come for the one-time non-depreciable expenditure come from?
Well, that will be discussed later, but it was for some minor, very, very minor expenses that were not done at the time of the spill.
You don't know what those things were?
Well, I can't really remember right now what they were.
Okay, and what is the basis for your allegation that the costs were tax deductible?
No, the tax status is a municipality. If you can write down in the fifth line there, it says tax rates municipality which paid no taxes, so it's not depreciable.
And where did you come up with the discount rate?
The discount rate in the Bend model is determined by the type of entity that you are. And for municipalities, the average bond rate is used as the discount rate.
And what is that percentage?
For this particular case, it is 4.5%.
Okay. And do you know what the prime rate interest rate is right now?
Prime interest for commercial lending?
Yes.
It's about 7.5%, 9%.
All right, and where did you come up with the useful life estimate of 15 years?
15 years is pretty typical on this type of an installation.
And what is the rate for SRF loan funding, state revolving fund loans?
Right now it's about 2.5.
And how did you select the probable payment date of 9/1/12?
That was in June, and counsel said that was a probable date of settlement.
Okay. All right, can we pull up Exhibit 39, the last page, please? So this is the shunt trip receipts for payment. So to make the change to install the seal in the middle of the page, it cut in EYS on shunt trip controls. The actual cost to fix that was approximately $500. Was that in your analysis?
No.
Okay. And can we go to Exhibit 98, please, which is the declaration of Aaron Yonker to Exhibit B on the financial information? Okay. So these funds here that are in the middle, were these the numbers that you used for determining there was a $5 million surplus?
I don't recognize that at all.
So where did the what numbers were you looking at to determine there was a $5 million surplus?
Okay. This report is entitled The Independent Auditor's Report and Financial Statements for the Year's Ending or for the Year Ending June 30th, 2010, okay, for the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District.
Okay, and do you know whether that was evidence in this case as part of an exhibit?
It was submitted, I think, by the discharger.
That wasn't my question. My question is, do the board members have that evidence?
I don't know.
Okay, I don't believe that they do.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so was there any evidence in the exhibits that were presented to the regional board that would show what you're claiming to be a $5 million surplus?
If you say no.
Okay. So if you look at this information, which was presented in evidence to the board members, this is the as of July 1st, 2012. These are the balances. So there's an operating fund balance, which is negative, an expansion fund, which are sewer connection fees that cannot be touched under the government code, replacement funds to total $3.7 million. Where do you find a $5 million surplus in there?
The ability to pay analysis is based on a U.S. EPA model. It's a computer model for determining the financial status of a district. And it uses the standard financial statements called a balance sheet, the income report, and a cash flow statement. The first basis for ability to pay is cash and cash equivalents, which comes from the financial report. Now, the last report that was submitted by the district was the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2010. If there were adequate reports that were prepared after that date, we did not see them. If that is a 2012 document, it is immaterial, because one, I would probably guess that is probably a budget. Is that correct? I have not seen that.
Okay.
What can I see the title page for that?
This is attached to Mr. Yonker's declaration. This was evidence that was provided with the district's our case in chief, essentially, and so you weren't given this to review?
I have seen this, okay.
Okay.
And this is not germane to ability to pay.
So cash on hand and ability to get to money is not relevant to whether someone can pay?
Well, your cash on hand comes from your financial statements. from your balance sheet. That is not a balance sheet.
But doesn't it directly reflect how much money you have in the bank?
That does not show a complete picture.
Okay. So the at the bottom, this the table, it's going to run over onto two pages, and she can put both of them up so we can see both. So this is as of the revenues and expenditures for the coming year, which would be this fiscal year that we would actually, the district would have to pay the penalty. So revenues minus expenditures, and then we put in there if this liability, which has now been raised, had to be paid, it would leave a negative amount for the district to run the treatment plan. How does that not reflect ability to pay?
Because your expenditure is listed as fiscal year 2010-13. Expenditures did probably include, there's no detail of that number, but I am guessing that that is has a substantial amount of depreciation. Depreciation is a non-cash cost.
Okay, but what about major budget items that have been scheduled that need to be done, and if they're not done, then we'll be back in another hearing.
Okay, you asked me about that number.
Right.
Okay, and I'm saying that number, I have looked at your audited financial statements, and your revenues are exceed your expenditures in every given year. You do not have an income problem in the district.
Okay, but the last ones that you looked at, you're relying on 2010, and we're 2 years later than that now.
That's right.
Because the audited forms for 2011 aren't due yet.
Oh, no, they're
done yet.
So. For 2011.
Or you don't have them.
They weren't provided.
There were the last I saw was 2010. Okay.
Okay, and where is your evidence that there is depreciation contained in those balances?
Well, I can show you. I mean, and that for these?
Yes.
Yeah, that's. I can. If you want to see it.
Well, if it's a document that's not in evidence, we'd have to put it into evidence. Okay.
Right there.
Okay, but this isn't. This is 2 years old.
Well, that's the latest you provided.
Right.
So. If he's referring to this document, is this in evidence?
It's not.
So why don't we mark it?
Yeah, we should
mark it.
Do
you have a problem with
that? I don't have any objection to it being marked as evidence, as long as the district doesn't.
Is this a district document?
It is.
I believe so, yes.
So let's mark it.
Okay, it would be Exhibit 114?
Yes.
It's the whole 2010 fiscal audited response.
It is the independent auditor's report and financial statements for the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District for the year ending June 30th, 2010.
Okay, and so are any of the funds that you were looking at in fund balance 19? Actually, can you go back to that earlier table, Sandra?
If you want to take a break, take copies.
Okay. So which fund balance were you looking at that had additional cash in it?
Okay. This document is not the document that is used to determine ability to pay.
Okay.
The ability to pay is determined by the financial statements of the district, which you have said are not completed yet for 2011, and they're also not completed for 20. Is that correct? 2012.
Right. Well, the fiscal year just ended fairly recently for 2012.
That's right.
Right. But my question goes to which fund balance. The district has dedicated funds that are for certain things, and certain of those funds cannot be touched under law.
I did not look at any of those.
Okay. So
I did not consider them.
So if that money, the $5 million that you were looking at, was in a restricted fund that couldn't be used for this purpose, how does that affect your ability to pay analysis?
Okay. For the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2010, the current assets, cash and cash equivalents, $5,190,955. That's where I got that.
Okay, but what I'm saying is you have to look at each of those funds to see where the money is, because under the government code, certain funds that come from sewer connection fees have to be deposited in a separate fund and can only be used for the purposes that those charges were collected. So they are restricted under law and cannot be used to pay a penalty, which is not the purpose that they were collected for. So my point is, if you're looking at money that's in a restricted fund, it cannot be used for ability to pay.
And
you didn't consider that when you're looking at the $5 million surplus.
I did.
How did you?
Those funds are not included in the cash and cash equivalents. Those funds are separate. Those funds are kept clear by law. There is a clear statement about proprietary funds and those that are restricted by law not to be touched. But it is very clear in your financial statement that your cash and cash equivalents, accounts receivable, interest receivable, and prepaid expenses are substantial. None of those are restricted by any rules or any laws. Those are liquid. Those are kept in interest-bearing accounts of no more than 90 days.
Okay, but this
could I, excuse
this
me.
Is a
yeah.
point.
Could I just ask him
yes,
a question?
Certainly.
Because it's Mr. Horner, where then would the funds that they're referring to that are designated and separate, where do they appear in this analysis? Or on this table,
they are in separate accounts. They're identified in proprietary accounts but they're not in the financial statements. These are the statements by law that must be accounted for in those categories. They are not proprietary funds. Mm-hmm. We don't look at proprietary funds. So we are aware of them. But I have no interest in the proprietary funds.
So this is a balance sheet, correct?
This is a balance sheet.
And so
yes.
it's not.
No, it wasn't submitted.
Identifying or recognizing all of the district's assets. Is
yes.
that what you're saying? That there's
yes.
other
yes.
assets that are not on this balance sheet.
Yes.
Okay.
Those proprietary funds. Yes.
Okay.
That
right.
they're non. Touchable.
Okay.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Well, I would just want to say we're at a little bit of a disadvantage because this wasn't put in as evidence that we were preparing for today. So I haven't had a chance to look at this or know where it came from or anything. So I just want to get that on the record that we're working a little bit of a disadvantage. We'll try to have district people testify to this later in the day. But this just for the point is that this is 2010. We're now 2 years later, and as everyone knows, your financial situation can change very quickly. And so if there was a need to go out to raise rates in order to pay this penalty, are you aware of the restrictions on a district that you cannot just raise rates, that you actually have to go out to a vote under Proposition 218 and Prop 226 before you can raise rates?
Yes, I am.
Okay, and is it a sure thing that you're going to be able to raise rates?
No, it is not.
Okay.
However, with this amount of cash, in sitting on the books, there is no way you should have to go to raise rates.
Okay, but that was sitting on the books 2 years ago.
Right.
Okay. So now if we could move to your Exhibit 109, which was the document that you submitted with your rebuttal. Exhibit 109, please. All right. In this document, you said that there were illegal competitive advantages that you were looking at. Can you explain to me how a municipality can have an illegal competitive advantage?
This response was prepared to the objection that was raised concerning the Bend model and the fact that the Bend model was controversial.
Okay, but wasn't the Bend model...
Excuse me, can I finish?
Oh,
can I finish? The Bend model is controversial. There's no question about it. Because it is used nationally against major corporations. They have had prepared a number of arguments to challenge the way that we discount, the way that we compound our interest, and this illegal competitive advantage, which does not pertain to this case.
Right. Okay. So municipalities are a little bit different than when you're using this model for a corporation that actually makes money.
That's okay. Correct.
You also... talked on the second page of your document that there were five alternative inflation rates that have been built into the model and that default discount rates can be overridden by the user. How are we to know from the black box what whether you're overriding, whether you're using a standard? How is someone to know just from the output what was the inputs?
First, this is not a black box. The Bend model is nothing more than an Excel spreadsheet. The Excel spreadsheet is distributed with every download. For the Bend model, it's a standard standalone calculator. The input for the Bend model is printed out. Now, I think, I'm not sure if we had an exhibit or a slide, but I can certainly show it to you. If
I can get it.
Oh, okay. In here is a description of the inflators that are used for a particular expenditure or capital cost that should have been used for compliance. And I can certainly go through those with you if you'd like. I can describe them. It's listed.
Before we do that, how are you doing? Are you okay? Okay, I'd like to see if we can finish with this witness, and then we're going to take a break. Is that all right? Okay, good.
Melissa, I think he's talking about 18.
Okay, if that helps. Which we had up before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have it. There you go.
Yep.
Is that what you want, Jerry?
That
page.
One,
yeah.
That one right there.
Okay.
And that's a standard data input sheet that's printed out.
Okay.
And indicates what all of the assumptions that were used in the analysis.
Okay. So also, if we can go back to Exhibit 109 to the second page, at the bottom, you were saying that the 2012-2013 adopted budget cannot be used to determine fund balance for the district. What's your basis for that statement?
Budgets have no rules.
Okay, but that's how the district functions. They work off of a budget.
And it's a planning document.
But it's also based on reality of what the money is in the bank at the beginning of the budget and how they're going to spend it.
Could be. that there's no checks and balances on budgets. Never has been, never will be.
Right, but that's the way that a public entity functions. They don't function 2 years
that's
ago
true.
On the audited documents. They're functioning day-to-day on
right.
what's in the bank.
And I have to do my analysis based on what was and what is currently.
Okay.
Not on what will be.
You also said that many dischargers are required by California law to prepare a comprehensive annual financial report, and you cited two sections of the government code. Do you know whether those sections apply to the district?
I'll object, and it calls for a legal conclusion.
You can answer.
So just say, I don't know. I don't know.
Jessica.
I'm confused.
That's okay. Don't say anything until we...
Well, he was putting these legal arguments into his document, so he obviously had a thought that this applied.
You asked him whether certain government code sections applied?
That's what I asked, whether those apply to the district.
I think it's fair to ask him the question. Go ahead.
Well, it's my opinion that every district should be using a comprehensive annual financial report.
Okay, but that's different than whether these code sections apply to the district.
The code sections are strongly suggested, okay? They're not mandatory.
Okay. And do you know whether those only apply to county governments?
They apply across the board. Any public agency should be using the comprehensive annual financial report format.
Okay, that wasn't my question. My question was, does this code section specifically apply to county sanitation districts?
I don't know.
Okay. And you said that there shouldn't be any impact to ratepayers, and that was based on your analysis that there's $5 million in surplus. Is that correct?
That's correct.
But if rates had to be raised to pay this penalty, there would be an impact to the ratepayers. Is that correct?
Could you answer that or ask that question again?
If the district had to raise its rates in order to pay this penalty, would that be an impact to the ratepayers?
If the rates were increased, it would be a direct impact to the ratepayers, yes.
Okay, and when you were considering the rates of the district, the only thing that was provided by the prosecution team in evidence was Exhibit 113, which were rates from 2006 to 2008. Were those the rates that you considered?
No.
So you were considering other rates that were not in evidence in this case?
No, the rates were effective in 2010.
Okay, but the prosecution team did not put those into evidence. Okay, so I just need to be clear which ones.
I don't know if they were or not, but it's directly, it came from the district, and it's your rate schedule that currently exists in the district.
Okay. All right. No further questions.
Okay,
Mr. Miss. Do you want to take board questions?
Do we have board questions?
I do.
We do.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Let's take a break first. Then we'll get into board questions. And let's take a break for 15 minutes.
Well, yeah.
Because I remember, I didn't know whether you had this thing up there or not.
Okay.
Okay, a couple of housekeeping matters. We're going to try to break for lunch at 12:30. Hopefully at a more natural break with a witness, but we'll have to see how that goes. Secondly, I've received a request for one or two of the public comment speakers that have a time crunch that would like to speak earlier in the day, and I'm going to grant that. Here's the trade-off. If you were to speak at the end of the day, you'd get 3 minutes. If I take you out of order now, you'll have 2 minutes. And that's just the trade-off I'm going to do. So can I see a show of hands so I get an idea of how much time I'm going to need for those that want to give up a minute and speak? I'm going to take you before we break for lunch. So I see one person. One, two. Okay, so three. Okay. All right, so those three we'll take before we break for lunch, and just those three at this point. And then third, we just wanted to let council know, Melissa and Judy, what we're going to do. Just wanted to make sure you're aware. We admitted a number of documents as hearsay documents. We're going to rely on you, both of you, if there's documents that you want admitted under a hearsay exception, you're going to need to lay the foundation and make sure we're aware of it, that you're going to offer it for the truth of the matter asserted. Okay?
Yes. I just had one clarifying question because Board Member Wolf was referring earlier to Mr. Appleton's testimony, which was one of the documents that was excluded as evidence.
Okay.
Right. We will, the board members will not be relying on anything in Exhibit 100 unless it is used for impeachment purposes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So we will continue with Mr. Horner. And let me ask you something. Were you waiving your redirect?
No, I was. I'm happy to do it now, or I'm happy to do it after board member questions.
Okay. Why don't you do it now?
Sure.
Okay.
So to the extent...
Mike.
Oh, sorry. To the extent we should just clear the record, we've placed in front of everyone a document that was submitted by the district that has been bait stamped SLO 02503 through SLO 02537. And Mr. Horner, do you have these documents in front of you?
Yes, sir. Yes, I do.
And for the record, I believe they are the independent auditor's report and financial statements for the years ending 2009, 2008, and then if you turn to page 02520, that is the financial statement for the year ending June 30th, 2010.
That's correct.
Okay. And this is where you had interacted with Ms. Thorne about the $5 million surplus, correct?
That's correct.
And you were assisting me with the preparation of our rebuttal materials. You prepared a couple of documents that we submitted with our rebuttal materials, including documents 108 and 113. These documents were submitted, and you had the opportunity to review them. They have not, the district has not submitted any more recent financial statements.
That's correct.
And Ms. Thorne showed you Mr. Yonker's declaration and some excerpts from that about a proposed budget and where their money is and how they have an inability to pay. You recall that?
Yes.
And you testified briefly about the difference between a budget and an audited financial statement.
That's correct.
And it is your opinion that the board would not be able to make a finding of an inability to pay on a budget.
That's correct.
Based on an audited financial statement from the year 2010, and now we're in the year 2012, would it surprise you to learn that a $5 million surplus has now been either spent or allocated in such a way that it cannot be used to pay a $1.4 million administrative civil liability penalty?
Yes, it would, and that conclusion is based on the fact that the current income and current expenses, as reported in the last fiscal year's document, is very adequate to meet. There should be no negative balances. If a catastrophe, if something happened that was unforeseen, you could see a substantial decline in that balance, but I'm not aware that that, in fact, has happened.
Okay. I wanted to direct your attention.
Hang on. Sorry, was there an objection?
No, I just wanted to clarify. You said last year's financial record. What are you referring to, the 2010 financial year? When you had just stated, you said the conclusion was based on the income expenses from the last year's fiscal statement.
Yes.
Okay.
2010.
Okay. Can you go to D for me?
That's fiscal year 2010.
Yes.
You're on it.
Then we had a brief discussion about the current wastewater rates for the citizens of Oceano. And this was actually submitted with the prosecution team's rebuttal documents and Exhibit 113. And I would like to point out that these documents and rates are not 4 years old. You assisted me with printing this document. This is page 6 of 18 for Exhibit 113. And can you describe what this reflects?
This is the rate structure that's currently being used by the district, and this was proposed to the board by ordinance number 2006-01, and it includes the rates that were submitted for approval up to May 1, 2010.
So the rates are more current than 4 years old. They're as current as May 1, 2010.
These were adopted by the board and are currently operational.
And for my final question or series of questions, you've testified in several ACL cases around the state, correct?
That's correct.
Are you familiar with how the inability to pay defense works for dischargers?
Yes.
Okay. So once the prosecution team conducts a review of documents, how does the burden of proof then shift?
It is on the discharger or the defense to show that they have an inability to pay.
And is it your opinion in this case that they have, that the district has demonstrated an inability to pay?
Yes, as of end of fiscal year 2010.
That the district has an ability to pay the recommended penalty.
That's right.
Okay. No further questions.
Mr. Young, if I could, we just got copies of these documents, and I didn't have them with me because they weren't in evidence. If I could just have a little leeway to ask a couple of questions.
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
You're referring to this
exhibit? Exhibit 114. So if you could put up, we don't have this electronically either, so I'm would ask if we could put up the page that you were testifying from, which I believe is page 3 of that document. You had it popped up when he was originally testifying. So, Dr. Horner, was this the document that you had talked to me about earlier that you were using to demonstrate a $5 million surplus?
Yes, I was.
Okay. So, did the amount of money in this financial report go down from 2009 to 2010?
Yes, it did.
Okay. And so the money that you're looking at, is it at the very bottom where it says unrestricted 5.180? 985, is that the number that you're using for the 5 million?
No, the number that is used is the amount of the current assets, which in 2010, I'm just going to say 2010, that's fiscal year 09-10, is 5,640,248. You have to subtract from that the current liabilities, which is, in this case, again, for the year 2010, $515,160. And that gives you what is called the net current assets. which in this case is $5,125,079.
Where do you see that number?
It's not on here.
Okay. Where did it come from?
Okay, it came from the total current assets. I could be over there. I
could show you. Can go and point to it.
Do you want a pointer to use? Would that help?
Yes, maybe, please. That way you can stay at the microphone.
And then maybe the screen can be enlarged. Can the exhibit on the screen be enlarged a little bit?
Well, I don't want it. This is a laser, right?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Just so we can. There we go.
I'm not. Am I getting anything?
Yeah.
Oh, here we go. Okay. Okay. The total current assets is $5 million. I can't quite read that. $5,640,248. Net current assets is this number right here, minus the total current liabilities, which is $515,169. That is what's called your total net current assets.
Okay, and is that not the same as essentially down at the bottom where it says net assets and then some of it's invested and some of it is quote-unquote unrestricted?
No.
No. So
no, it's not safe.
How is it different?
Well, what number are you referring to?
Down at the bottom, there's a $13 million figure for invested in capital assets, and then unrestricted is $5.1 million, which is essentially in the same range of the number that you're speaking to me about.
Your net assets includes a lot of invested capital, net-related debt. It's got all your other things in it. That's not what we're looking at in terms of ability to pay.
Okay, so you're using the $5 million figure of cash and cash equivalents?
Yes.
Okay, so if we could put up the last page of this exhibit. No. It says Note 9, Reserves and Retained Earnings.
The next page after the one that's on the screen.
Yeah. It's bait stamped SLO-02537.
Oh, mine. Oh, yeah, it's upside down. I can't see that number. So does that $5 million number that you're looking at include these reserve accounts?
No.
Why not?
Because it doesn't.
Okay, well, where is that money accounted for on the earlier slide?
One of the problems that you have with non-standardized financial reports is that there is a whole degree of latitude that the auditors have in preparing these reports. A comprehensive annual financial report dictates how all of these numbers will be prepared and reported. The procedure in a comprehensive annual report specifies that the current net assets are unencumbered. Unencumbered either with respect to restriction or with respect to law or rule.
Okay.
And that page right there is not what I'm concerned about.
Okay. And you had talked with Ms. Macedo about the rates, and those were projected rates from an earlier time, were projected to what they would be in the later time. Is that correct?
No.
The document that she had up on the screen, it said future rates as of,
no.
And then each different year.
Okay. An ordinance number 2006-01 was put before the board of directors. These were proposed rates that were approved.
Right.
And now are currently in use.
Okay. And what do those rates cover?
those recover the rates to the connections for the district.
Okay, so that covers the treatment plant and the trunk lines that are owned by the district, is that correct?
It covers whatever the district covers to recover, to charge service to recover for the expenses.
Okay, and do the satellite collection agencies also charge rates for transport of sewage?
They do.
And those are additive to the district's rate, is that correct?
Only for those areas that pertain to the other, their rate structure or their own. My understanding is that the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District furnishes services to two other districts. Is that correct?
No, it's three.
Well, aren't they included? They're one.
No.
They're one.
I can't testify, but it'll come out later in the
okay. The $16 is to recover their costs.
Okay. But then there are satellite collection system agencies as well.
Yes.
And do you know what those rates are?
I do. I've got them.
Okay.
Do you want to discuss those?
For all three of the collection system agencies?
I do.
Okay. Which collection system agencies do you have rates for?
Oceano CSD. City of Grover Beach. That's it. I have two.
And do you have what those monthly rates are?
Yes, I do.
And do you know whether the prosecution team put those into evidence?
No.
Okay. Can she pull this up? Exhibit 113.
You want me to pull it up? Or?
No, we can do it. We have that one. We need the input. Okay, if you can blow that first table up a little bit for me, please. Okay, so you said these were the current rates, but the last rate is, these were adopted in 2006, is that what you testified?
Yes.
And so this says future rate as of May 1st, 2010. Is that the latest rate?
Yes.
And do you know what the current rates are?
Well, it says right there.
Do you know whether they've been changed since May 1st of 2010?
No.
Okay. No further questions.
Okay. Any redirect? Okay. Now we'll have board questions. Let me start at the far end. Mr. Johnston, do you have any questions? Then we'll just go down the line to Mr. Jordan and Dr. Wolf and to Mr. Harris and to Mr. Jeffries.
Yes, Dr. Horner. Excuse me. I'm still trying to sort out this, and I admit reading financial statements is far from my specialty. I'm looking at the final page of this auditor's report. I believe it was shown earlier, of the 2010 auditor's report, and it's a note 9, reserves and retained earnings. So is it your understanding, and I see a reserve for capital replacement and expansion. Is it your understanding that this is the fund created that's set aside, I guess created by connection fees, and can't be touched?
That's the way this reads, yes.
Okay, and does that, so I'm looking at there's a bottom number there, $5,180,985 of total unrestricted net assets. And it's not clear to me why they would, maybe this is a term of art, but why they would call it unrestricted if it in fact is restricted to only using for the specified purpose. Does that term unrestricted mean that they can use it for any purpose, or is that, do you have any sense?
Procedures that are established in the comprehensive annual financial report does not allow for any kind of what I'm going to call, probably incorrectly, double counting. Okay? The assets that are listed in your balance sheet, which are current assets, must be unrestricted. Those must exist as cash or cash equivalents or the accounts receivable, interest receivable, prepaid expenses. And they cannot appear in a proprietary restricted fund.
So what you're testifying is that if this accounting form were in the preferred format, that this would be quite clear.
Yes.
Okay, but I'm trying, it's not.
It's not.
So I'm trying to get at whether you're able to testify one way or another as to whether there is a portion of what you are looking at as, I believe the term you used was net unrestricted assets. Net current assets.
Right.
That is, in fact, a reserve for that they cannot legally touch for capital replacement and expansion. And are you able to discern that from these documents?
This document, the definition, the standard accounting definition for net current assets is that it is unrestricted. It is primarily set aside or set for use for immediate contingencies. And it is not earmarked for any particular use. That is a standard accounting definition.
Okay, so what you, if I don't want to put words in your mouth, but what my understanding then from what you're saying is that if standard accounting definitions apply, that the restricted, the connection fees restricted fund is not included in the net current assets.
That's correct.
Okay, I think I understand.
Okay, Mr. Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Dr. Horner. I actually am sympathizing with both of your, not both sides' points. My experience is that in city government at least, is that the use of the words encumbrances and restrictions is a term that's played with different ways by cities and also even within departments within the city. And could these numbers on this page also, while I understand the point you're making, could they also just not be also be a pot that is being accumulated for long-term financial source for capital projects? Could they not have a 20-year list of capital projects, and this is the method they are accumulating funds until they are ready to do that project or until they're ready to encumber or restrict those funds for that project? Isn't this where it would show up?
What you're asking me for is, if I understand your question, is is a question on managing financial accounts. How would you manage what you have and how you would indicate on paper what you're doing? Okay. And I'm reluctant to go there because that's certainly not my job.
Okay, but on the flip side, you're asking me to presume an alternative scenario that you present, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Hypothetically, if an entity is planning what you said, a capital expansion, a project, what you should do is prepare the necessary fund to do that, to encumber your savings, to be able to earmark that, to be able to use it when it is required. And that's, I get back to this CAFR, Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, mandates that. That is set out in formula. By saying that you have a current asset, you cannot have it encumbered. So if they're thinking about that, it is not evident to the person that's reading the financial statements.
So my experience is, I think, a little different than that, and maybe that we're just far apart on this word encumbered, because if I have a 20-year schedule of unfunded capital improvements, those out years are subject to city council or board of supervisor turnover as to what will be funded in the future or not. And I don't think they're necessarily, at one point in time, if they're restricted or encumbered, those monies can move back out again. But they're certainly shown as, in my experience, they're shown somewhere on a balance sheet or a fund or a bucket as available funds being set aside for a future capital project.
And it, excuse me, right now.
So that's my experience. So
yes.
Is there a question?
I understand
that. So that might not be proper in the way that you're describing it, that's or true. In the way you would apply it to this particular situation. So really, I go back to my question again. Is it possible that the top line there of $2.9 million is being represented in that method?
Well, I don't know.
You don't know if it's possible?
Well, it's possible, but
okay.
I think that's only in the management of the district.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks.
Dr. Wolf.
Thank you. In your testimony, you addressed two issues. One is the ability to pay the fine, and then the second one, which was the first part you covered, was the competitive benefit of not having performed the electrical repairs, which were budgeted to initially $200,000. And in the capital improvement activities, the electrical systems upgrades were listed as 04MB116, and as I recall, those originally were estimated about $200,000 to perform various electrical system upgrades. And in earlier 01MB101, energy service project, is a cogeneration installation, which, if I recall, was budgeted around $700,000. The justification, also in the evidence that were provided for the cogeneration, was about $120,000 year energy saving by installing this system. That was one of the primary economics element of the analysis. So when reviewing competitive benefits in allocating certain funds for certain activities versus other activities, when you reviewed the fiscal year 2010, had you made any observation in terms of the ability of a district to commit some, you know, significant large capital equipment in one way versus another, meaning 200,000 versus 700,000. And I'm not asking you, you know, the technical question associated with whether or not one would be more beneficial than the other, but the affordability of being able to spend 700,000 versus 200,000.
No, I didn't. I did not make that determination. My job is to determine if there is a compliance project that was not conducted or undertaken, or practices that were not followed, or procedures that needed to be upgraded, and to determine what the economic gain from that by not doing it, either by avoiding it completely or delaying it. And that's all I did.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Harris.
No. No questions.
No questions. Mr. Jeffries.
Yes, Dr. Horner, I think there's some confusion that I'm hearing from some of my colleagues of comparing a budget to a financial statement or an audited financial statement. In governmental accounting, it's very difficult to track some of these items. You talked, and there's been a lot of discussion about restricted funds. There are restricted funds that are restricted by a vote of a board, and there's restricted funds by government code. Now, I know you said you didn't look at restricted funds by government code, but did you look at the budgets and their financial statements to look at restricted funds that were placed by a vote of a board? And those funds normally are for capital projects, which could be changed by a vote of the board, by a simple vote. Did you look at those as restricted funds or non-restricted funds?
I assume those were restricted funds.
You assume those were restricted?
That's right, yes.
So that would mean there would be more cash available if the board decided, if they had an emergency, that they could buy a vote and change that restriction to whatever they wanted to do with it at that particular time. Now, did you do any comparisons from their budgets to their audited financial statement year endings for each year? Did you do any comparisons?
No, I did not.
You did. So you just took the audited financial statement.
That's right.
And a lot of the audited financial statements do not bring up all those particular restricted funds that are normally in budgets.
Yes, they do. The restricted funds are listed as a financial statement.
All restricted?
Yes.
Okay, you took into account for all restricted.
Yes, I looked at those.
All right.
Yeah. So, but not as a budgeted item. I didn't look at the budgets. I only looked at the reported funds that were in the proprietary.
Okay. Yeah. And did you separate those restricted funds? You did not.
Yes.
My understanding. You
yes.
did. Oh, you
yes.
did.
Yes, they are not included in the financial current assets.
Okay. Just to explain my question a little bit further.
Okay.
And maybe I'm repeating myself. As I stated, there are government required restricted funds.
Yes.
There are restricted funds that are placed on funds by the local board.
Yes.
Okay. Did you separate those out again?
Yes.
You did?
Yes.
Okay. So, and that was included in their availability to pay?
Yes.
All right. Now, there was an indication, I know, by somebody that said to raise rates, you have to have a vote by the people. But you can also raise fees. Now, some people say, well, fees are taxes. Yeah, sure they are. Anytime you have an increase from government, it's a tax. I don't care what you call it. But you don't have to raise the fees. You don't have to have a vote of the people to raise fees.
you have to have, my understanding is for the district, is that you have to have a majority of the board of directors.
That's right. They can raise the fees, which is a normal operating procedure.
Me, of course.
Now, I understand.
You know, Russ, I think it's best that we pose your questions to him instead of us kind of testifying as to what we may or may not know. You know, I think council hasn't objected, and you know, we're tending to do that, and I think it's.
Well, I'm becoming an expert witness for somebody.
Well, I'm just saying that it's best that you ask the witness the information that you're looking for instead of loading it up.
Well,
with a lot of information, so
yeah. Well, I have a lot of experience.
Well, we all do.
Yeah, I understand.
But I think it's best that you ask him the questions if you can, and not load it up with so much stuff. Do you know what I mean?
I think there's something that has not been discussed here that is pertinent to your question. I use the U.S. EPA. Model that determines ability to pay for municipalities. Okay. In the priority for ability to pay, we use current assets as the priority for payment. The second priority involves their ability to finance. Third, they go into raising fees or dealing with their operating income. So that is the last priority, that ability to pay. See, we didn't even get to the financing part of it because the assets were sufficient to cover the proposed ACL.
Well, let me ask you this then. Your analysis of the 3 years that you presented to us, in your opinion, with the trend, do they have the ability to pay the fine?
Yes, they do.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay. Last question for you, Dr. Horner. Can you tell us what exhibit number you were referring to early on when you were talking about the 2004-2005 budget? And I think it had some discussion about the proposal for an electrical system upgrade.
Number two.
That's exhibit number two. Okay. All right. Any other board questions? All right. Good. Okay. Thank you, Dr. Horner. All right.
And just as a point of clarification, we took Dr. Horner out of order just like the district took Mr. Toma out of order. So he was planning to depart, and so we just wanted to make sure that was acceptable.
Is that okay? Okay. That's all right. But you can have your witness list any way you want.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what order you were proposing. So as far as I know, he was your first witness.
Yeah. So we're going to call our next witness, Jim Fisher.
I thought you were going to use cards for people who are leaving.
Before we go to lunch.
Oh, before we go to lunch.